Welcome to the Popecast, episode 11. This week, it's a special episode of the Popecast because Pope Francis just released a new document. So instead of going over the life of one of our popes, this week we have an interview with Catholic author and speaker Katie Prejean McGrady talking about the document, her recent experience in Rome at a special gathering of young adults from around the world, and Pope Francis's unique mission and ministry in the church today. It was a fantastic conversation, and I hope you enjoy. John McGrady, welcome to the Popecast as our first interview. So welcome.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
And of course, did I pronounce your maiden name correctly, by
you
the
way? You did. Prejean. You didn't say Prejean, so that's good.
So confession, I don't know if my mom listens to this. She probably doesn't know how to download this, but she still says Prejean.
Oh, that's
oh, Katie Prejean. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's allowed to. She picked me up from the airport at like 10 o'clock at night, so we've become friends.
That's right.
And got me a Moose magazine. I don't know if you knew that story.
Oh, I do know. Yeah.
Yeah. I still have it. I think I accidentally just sent you a heart via Skype. Sorry.
I don't know. So
I don't know how Skype works. Okay,
it's
moving
like a
on.
New Skype thing where the heart pops up if you like hover your mouse. Over
yeah. It's like know. It. It's we're both happily married to other people. Listeners. I have a baby. Matt's a newlywed. But yes. Now we're going to talk about the Pope.
Yeah. And I'm not going to edit that out just to keep it awkward, whatever.
There we go. Catching foxes like.
Yes.
Discussion over instruction.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Yes. Okay. So, to clarify, I guess, so we're going to, you're on the Popecast, to talk about Gaudete et Exultate, right? The new Pope Francis apostolic exhortation that came out 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Monday. Monday morning.
Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. So before we get started, I just want to clarify for those following on Twitter that you're able to confirm that you're not a heretic or a bad Catholic, right?
Correct. Yeah. Last time I checked.
Wow. Yeah. Thank God. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to make sure.
You.
We didn't have to cut the interview short. So no, I'm kidding. Yeah. So, but speaking of Twitter, so the reason I got this idea to ask you to be on the Popecast was you spent the better part of the day, right? Live tweeting the whole document, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
With a nicely placed GIF. I'm pretty sure I laughed out loud several times. Retweeted several times. So yeah, maybe to start, what just like where that idea came from and the fruit that you saw from it, good and bad, maybe, that day and since.
Yeah. 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 I love GIFs. In fact, when I become good friends with people, the mark of true friendship in my life is when all I do is communicate with you through GIFs. So like I've got a few people on my phone. I could not tell you the last time I actually like texted a sentence. It's just like, you know, I'm thinking about them. And so I'll send a well-placed GIF or like meme out of context. And so I woke up Monday morning. I remembered, oh, that's right. The Pope's dropping a new document today. And so I started doing it. And I only got through the first chapter because on Monday I was in Notre Dame, Indiana, filming videos for Ave Maria Press. So I was pretty busy all day long behind the camera, filming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got back to my hotel room, I was like, I might as well like dive back into it. You know, had a really good dinner. I had nothing to do. The baby's asleep. My husband's working on school stuff back home. Like turned on CNN, you know, poured myself another cup of coffee, which is a terrible idea because I was awake until like 1 a.m. And I started rereading it. And as soon as I got started, Jennifer Fulweiler, my dear friend, tweeted that I was doing it, and I was like, oh crap, now I like have to do the whole document because like all these people. So I kind of got Twitter peer pressured into doing it, and then I just started having fun with it. And I mean I'll be honest, like I skimmed it to find like the really good lines and went back and kind of read it in more detail on the flight the next day, and I'm a big fan. Geeked out about a couple of parts that we could talk about later on in the podcast, but I thought it was the coolest thing how many people started following along that probably would not have realized that a new document had dropped for a couple of days. Cause like in Catholic world, like it's a big deal for those of us that work for the church or like are in the Catholic zeitgeist, but the average nominal Catholic who maybe follows a few people on Twitter and like sees Catholic Twitter stuff from time to time, like I kind of flooded their newsfeed for like a couple of hours with all these quotes. And so I think it effectively shared some of the good nuggets from the document.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I just thought of, are you a Parks and Rec fan?
Oh, big time. I have a little Sebastian poster in the corner of my office.
Yes. Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just thought of the time when Anne was moving away and she had to break the bad news to Leslie, but also brought waffles with her. It's the GIFs. I always say GIFs, but GIF, GIF, whatever.
Yeah,
but like the GIFs are the waffles, and the quotes are like the stuff that you need to, like, people need to know, but they might not go and seek it out.
That's so good. So my husband and I actually, I'll do a little commercial. My husband and I are starting a podcast called Pawnee, Pennsylvania, where it's two married people who are obsessed with Parks and Rec and The Office talk about their favorite episodes after the baby goes to sleep. That's literally the tagline. There is no catechism part of it at all. It is like not a Catholic podcast. It's just a husband and wife who love these shows. So tune in, folks.
All right.
So I think GIFs are actually, this is going to sound super controversial. Maybe this is why people think I'm a heretic. I think GIFs are a modern mean of modern means of evangelization.
Yes, they are.
Like they can be funny and engaging. GIF the gospel is one of my absolute favorite things to do on Twitter.
Yes.
And I've had some good success with like retweets and likes because I think it just puts it in people's view and it makes them laugh. And so this was a very GIFable papal document. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, and that's a perfect transition. So the next thing I had was, did you have like some personal favorites you care to share? And then we can like do the geeking out on the parts that.
So my favorite. I have two. I love the part where he says, do you let his fire inflame your heart? Unless you let him warm you more and more with his love and tenderness, you will not catch fire. And it's like people are going to take that out of context and think like, you know, like we're all walking around blazing. So my favorite, I put that Elmo gif, Elmo and fire. Yes. I love that. It's one of my favorite gifs. I think my absolute favorite, though, was the closing line. One of the closing lines of the document. He says, Mary, our mother, does not need a flood of words. She does not need us to tell her what's happening in our lives. All we need to do is whisper time and time again, Hail Mary. And so I used this gif of a little kid like poking his mom in the face and like trying to wake his mom up, which is what motherhood is like. Let me tell you, everybody, the baby is constantly in your face wanting something.
Oh, yeah. And we better believe that Jesus in his human nature did that to Mary, all through toddlerhood, of course.
Mommy. And then all of chapter 3, parts 100, 101, 102, 103, just about like how we can't see. Trying to put this in the right way. We can't see one social issue that concerns human life as more important than another because human life is human life is human life, which is probably one of the more controversial parts of the document. We can talk about it. I think some people kind of got all up in arms about it. Those are my favorite gifts.
Nice. Okay. We'll make sure from the Popecast Twitter account that we tweet this out. All 13 followers. It's relatively new. So, you know.
I'll retweet it all.
Thanks.
I'll give you a tonight to my new followers that think I'm a heretic.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah, good. So they'll think that I'm a heretic too, which is
there
fine.
There we go.
Because if you're not getting called a heretic by...
You're not doing it. Yeah, what are you doing? You have to
heretics.
Be able to tick people off on both sides.
Yes.
Like, that's the goal.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you mentioned, what was it? 101, 102, 103? Something
yes.
like that?
Yes. Let me pull it up.
Yeah. So maybe feel free to just kind of geek out on your favorite parts of the document itself.
Yeah. So, this is the title, Ideologies Striking at the Heart of the Gospel. What a powerful line, right? And he's essentially telling us that like, we have to be a people that are big picture focused, which I think is very hard for, I know it's hard for me to hear sometimes because I have my pet projects. Like I have the topics that I prefer to talk about or that I prefer to think about, or like the initiatives that I think are more important. And so like in America, in the United States of America, I think back it up. Pause. You might have to edit some of this. I think I'm talking about the wrong part.
Oh, no, I think you are. Paragraph 100, ideologies strike at the heart of the gospel. Yeah.
Where does he say abortion? Oh, there it is. Okay. There. Sorry. Okay. Forget what I'll pick up where I was saying. So like in paragraph 101, where he goes really hardcore about making sure that we look at the whole issue of how we're not respecting and treating human life in the way that we need to. So obviously, like, and he says this, our defense of the innocent unborn needs to be clear, firm, and passionate, for at stake is the dignity of a human life, which is always sacred and demands love for each person, regardless of his or her stage of development. Like, in that moment, every pro-life worker in America, around the world, should feel affirmed in their desire to work to end abortion. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But then he also says, and I think this is beautiful, equally sacred, however, are the lives of the poor, those already born, the destitute, the abandoned, and the underprivileged. the vulnerable, infirm, and elderly exposed to covert euthanasia, the victims of human trafficking, new forms of slavery, and every form of rejection. And like when I read it, I got uncomfortable because I could not tell you the last time I thought about the evil of poverty, because that's not a reality that I face. Like, I own my own home. I've got money in my savings account. Like, I literally just went and bought a new stroller for my kid because we wanted a different kind of stroller and I didn't think twice about it. Mm-hmm. But that's not the reality for a lot of people. And so I think what the Pope is trying to call us to is a recognition that that is not the reality for a lot of people. And that if we're defending the unborn, we should also be defending the living. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. Like, I think that's one of the things that Pope Francis is really good at, is calling us to a broader perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Well, that reminds me of, how many times do we have maybe like pro-choice people who don't say like, you're just a pro-life idiot, but they say, oh yeah, well, all Catholics care about is saving babies. But then once they're born, nobody gives a crap or something. It's like, this is the answer. And it's like the official, and it like should call us Catholics, right? I mean, cause I would agree to the discomfort, especially thinking about like actual poverty. I was just listening to the new Catholic Stuff podcast today, and Father Nathan's talking about like living in an affluent country, but then like going to India, and just, it's like we have an idea of American poverty, which is like homeless people on the street corner, and like not to, you know, talk down about that kind of poverty because that's real, but then you go to India and there's like human excrement in the streets.
Right, it's rampant. It's far different than what we're experiencing. Yeah, absolutely. When I think sometimes having gone to the pre-synod and sat in a room with people from Africa and all other manner of nations, I was the only United States of American citizen in my language group, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
I got this whole new global perspective of like the problems that we are fighting about in the United States of America with our embarrassment of riches that we have in our Catholic Church here. Like, they're petty in comparison to some of the very real issues. So one example, I met a young man from Nigeria, sweet guy, his name is Thomas. We met in St. John Lateran's. We were there praying the Stations of the Cross, and he was my partner for the station that we were reading together. And so we got to visiting while we're waiting for our turn. And I asked him what he did. And he was like, oh, you know, I help out with the church, and but I don't have a job. And I was like, oh, well, you don't work for the church? And he said, oh, no, in Nigeria, you go work for the church, and then you come home, and they pat you on the back, and they say, good job, thank you. And then you have to figure out how to pay your bills. And like versus me, who's literally traveling to Atlanta tomorrow to speak for an obscene amount of money over the course of the next 5 days.
Right.
Because like that's something it's a wealthy parish and they're affluent and they can do that. And I can ask for that. So we're fighting about stupid stuff. If we say like, oh, well, the Pope said pro-life workers aren't valued. No, he said you're valued. He also said people that are helping rampant poverty are valued. Like, get over yourself. This is a good thing that we're broadening our perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of like, this is just generally, I mean, this is one example from the document, but I mean, I read the first third so far, but it's like so quintessentially Francis, because one, it's simple. Like I'm thinking my dad who hardly goes to mass, my like sisters who would never think in a million years to read a papal document, or like all of these family members who like would never touch something like this normally, because it's normally like high theology, whatever. Generally, like there's just like simple lines. Like what did he give the example of? He's like, okay, holiness comes in small doses every day. Here's an example. A woman goes shopping with a friend and starts to gossip, but decides not to. It's like the whole thing seems to me, it's like written like that.
When he says that at the start, he's not trying to redefine, he's trying to repropose the call in a practical way for our own time. And so everything that I've ever read of Francis, even, and I'm going to pull my pre-synod card again, like even being in the room with him for a few hours, he's a pastor's pastor. But yes, he's the Pope. Yes, he's the Vicar of Christ. He is the Supreme Pontiff who, you know, wears the crown. But like, he's also the kind of guy that like, I'm pretty sure if I spoke Italian and I walked up to him and said, hey, Padre, would you hear my confession? Like he would have sat down and heard my confession.
Right.
Cause like probably doesn't get the chance to do that very often. And this document reads like a letter that a pastor would write to his people after Lent, as you're entering into Easter. And we all know after Easter comes ordinary time when everybody starts to kind of slack back off of their faith. Like this was kind of a rallying call of, hey, everybody, like we should be holy. And so some of the bombshell lines that talk about that, that encourage us to pray, that encourage us to not be rigid and stuck in our own perspective and our own attitudes, or like looking at the lives of the saints and saying like, I'm called to that as well. That was super encouraging. I love part 14 in the first chapter. He says, to be holy does not require being a bishop, a priest, or a religious. Yes. We are frequently tempted to think that holiness is only for those who can withdraw from ordinary affairs to spend much time in prayer. And that is not the case. We are all called to be holy by living our lives with love and by bearing witness in everything we do, wherever we find ourselves. When I read that line in my hotel room, I spilled my coffee because I like sat up so quickly. Because I immediately went back to the pre-synod document that we wrote 3 weeks ago that specifically said that so many young people sometimes think that like holiness or like their vocation, like they only think of vocation in one specific way. And this kind of felt like Francis was being like, I heard you. And like, I'm going to tell everybody that that's not the case. Yeah. And like, hopefully people like it was so encouraging. And then he gives really practical examples. Are you married? Be holy by loving and caring for your husband or wife as Christ does for the church. Do you work? Be holy by laboring with integrity and skill. Are you a parent or a grandparent? Be holy by patiently teaching the little ones how to follow Jesus. Like that was so it was very pastoral. It was very practical.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and maybe can you fill in.
Yeah.
Like the pre-synod. So what, that's okay. But like for anybody who doesn't know what that is, what is it? Why did you get to do it? And what did you get to do while you were there?
So I feel like I'm the broken record that's everybody like, hey, let's talk about this really cool thing I got to do. Cause it's like the only cool thing I've done all year other than having a baby. So Pope Francis is called, he called a synod, which is a gathering of bishops, in October of 2018. So this pre-synod was one of four preparatory meetings that happened to write documents and to help inform the bishops that are gathering in October. And this particular gathering was of young people between the ages of 16 and 30. The average age of us there was probably between 24 and 28. Mostly young professionals working for the church or very involved in youth ministry work back in our home dioceses and organizations and movements. And so we were called forth. Literally the name of the synod was We Talk Together. And the whole point was to spend a week in dialogues. We had 15 questions that we had to talk about that we worked our way through, that unpacked identity, unpacked our definitions of Jesus, unpacked our perceptions of faith and prayer and what we're looking for from the church. And that all of those conversations were summarized in a document that was released the final day of our synod. It was an 11-page document that it's not an encyclical. It's not an apostolic exhortation. It's not a treatise on theology. It should be read like a letter. Like a letter from young people to bishops, most of whom are over 50, so that we can say like, hey, like this is the state of the average millennial today. This is what high school kids are thinking and feeling back in their countries. Like this is what we're dealing with. This is what we think. This is how we're confused. We need help. It was controversial in the sense that some people thought we didn't talk about certain topics enough. Some people kind of read it with that fancy phrase, right? Hermeneutic of suspicion. They looked at it as if like it was already going to be tainted from the start. Right. But I can honestly say I was there. I helped write it. Some of my lines are in it word for word from the drafts that my group submitted, which is pretty cool. And I can tell you 1,000% that it was a heartfelt plea to the bishops of the world who are gathering in October to bring back the disaffiliated, to encourage those who are already very much affiliated and very passionately Catholic, and to help us all grow in our journey with Christ. And so when I read this Gaudete et Exultate, it felt like right away, it was almost as if Pope Francis read our document and said, you know what, I want to talk about that. And I'm pretty sure this was like in the works for a long time prior to the pre-synod happening. But at the same time, I can't help but imagine that when Pope Francis left our gathering, because he came and spent 4 hours with us on the first Monday of the pre-synod, 4 hours, the Holy Father took 4 hours out of his busy schedule to sit in a room with 300 young adults and talk to us and listen to us. And it was just, we were the most important people in the world in that time with him. Like he very much valued that. I can't help but think that maybe those thoughts were coming up in his mind when he was finalizing the draft of this, or that like he was thinking about us, the average 25, 26, 27-year-old in the world today, and how he could articulate holiness to us, which is maybe that's why I'm just so excited about it.
No, I mean, I'm right there with you. And obviously I wasn't in Rome sitting with the Pope for 4 hours, but it's like understanding, and it's so beautiful that it's kind of that it's sad that it has to experience a resurgence, but that it's getting a resurgence. It's like the church is about Jesus first, and it's about Jesus and you first. Like, obviously it needs to be done in the context of the church in order to be sustainable and for discipleship to work and like all that stuff. But no, that's so cool. So like, what was that? I mean, like, can you think of like a few nuggets from that 4 hour? Like, I just want to nerd out so bad on that.
Yeah. Like, well, he, so the Pope? All of his answers to the questions that were asked are up on the Synod website, synod2018.va. Two big things that have stuck out in my head pretty much the whole time. So he spoke very passionately about clericalism and like, how both lay people have become very clerical in our perception of priests, and how priests have become very much, and not all priests, obviously. There's some great priests that I am dear friends with and that I know through the interwebs that are not like this. But some priests have this attitude as they become princes. And so one thing that he said that stuck out in my head, I actually tweeted it, and then I texted it to some of my priest friends. I was like, this is not a knock on you. I'm just letting you know that you do this well. He said, a priest that acts like a prince and not a brother is no priest at all. Right. And I was like, oh, that was really powerful. He spoke remarkably passionately about human trafficking and how it is modern day slavery. And like, when I tell you, so he had notes because he got the questions the night before from what we were told. And he put down his paper when he started talking about human trafficking and spoke off the cuff very passionately about women that he has met who have been slaves of this industry, and like how heartbreaking it is that we live in a culture and a time that still objectify women, even in the midst of all this feminist, like women are equal movements. Like, we're still exploiting women in this way. Mm-hmm. So he's, and I was surprised how, like, and that's not to say that the Pope is out of touch, but like how in touch he was with that topic. Like, you could tell that he had thought about this, that he'd probably researched a little bit, that he'd had conversations with people that know their stuff, and that he wasn't just this out of touch old guy who was like, oh yeah, human trafficking is bad. Like, he cared about it. Mm-hmm. And he spoke, so one of the young men that was there is a self-proclaimed non-believer. Never said he was an atheist or an agnostic, but he's a non-believer. His name was Maxime. He was from France. Spoke somewhat okay English. So he and I had a couple of conversations over the course of the week. He got to ask the Pope a question. And his question was, how would I begin my faith? Like, if I were interested, like, how could I start? And it was so sweet. Pope Francis, he hugged every single young person that got up there to ask a question. Like, he got up and personally hugged them and like had a moment with them. And he spent the longest time with this guy, the non-believer from France. And so like, and he puts his hands on his shoulders and he like pulls him into a hug, and you see him whispering something to the guy. And then he sits back down and he said, I just wanted you all to know, I told him that he's already begun and we are so happy he is here. Man. And it was like, oh my gosh, what a dad. Like, what a papa. Like, it was, I started tearing up because it was like, I just witnessed a remarkably pastoral and beautiful moment that this and then I watched that guy all week. Like, that guy had the week of his life with a bunch of Catholics at the Vatican. Like, he was so joyful and on fire. And we had a big, huge, not many people know this, we had a huge dance party out at the Castle Gandolfo Papal Gardens with Sister Christina, that singing nun from Italy.
What?
That won the private concert for us. That guy, the non-believer, was in the front row of the Papal Gardens concert, like, rocking out with his nun. And, like, I can't help but think that the value and the benefit of that gathering was so that we all that were there could experience church in a global and beautiful and universal way, and then bring those experiences back home and talk about that and encourage that and witness to that. So it was, without a doubt, one of the top five coolest things I've ever gotten to do in my entire life.
Yeah, of course.
And now reading this document again, it's just like, they actually listened to us. Like, how cool. I can't wait to see what comes out of October. I really can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's beautiful. Yeah, so thanks for sharing all of that.
That's
like the conception that I've gotten of Pope Francis, and why I love him so much is because, like, one, I forget so easily that he's an 83-year-old man.
He's an old guy.
Like,
you can
he's super old.
And he walks slowly.
but exactly. But he's like, it's like the same thing. When you see anybody on fire for Jesus, it's like, and like even people who have near death experiences go to heaven, they're like, oh yeah, I couldn't tell how old they were. Mm-hmm. So like, you just like, that just like escapes you because they just seem so youthful, like so childlike or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And
there's a great joy.
Yeah, huge joy. And I think that's so beautiful, and it's no wonder that it's attractive. What's unfortunate is that it seems like in so many dioceses and parishes, it's like there's so many rose-colored glasses out there. Like they're like, oh, it's fine. It's like we're gonna do this program without really thinking about like our mission or the goals that we actually want to reach, or the fact that our parish will die in 20 years if we don't actually do something. Like if we don't, you know, have a conversation with the parish secretary who is just in maintenance mode and has been for 20 years, or I mean, whatever. You know, there's tons of those examples, but no, I think this is beautiful that there's just these little things, and like that's how the church is going to survive.
Yeah, and that's been Francis's goal from the get-go. I think we forget. So sometimes people are like, ah, oh, Francis is off the cuff, and Francis doesn't know what he's doing, and Francis she talks out of his behind, and it's like, no. Pope Francis is very calculated.
Oh yeah,
like Pope Francis knows what he's doing. He knows the pastoral perspective that he has, and whether you like that or not, like is that's your own opinion. But so one of my favorite parts of the document is in section 135 and 136. So we're you know kind of like right smack dab in the middle. Like things are just about to get good. And I geeked out. I posted on Insta story like way too much. Sometimes I don't like talking at my own self on Instagram, but like I geeked out on Instagram when this happened. So I'm reading and reading and reading. I'm sipping the coffee. I shouldn't be drinking at 8 o'clock at night. And so this is the line that I read. 135. God is eternal newness. He impels us constantly to set out anew, to pass beyond what is familiar to the fringes and beyond. He takes us to where humanity is most wounded, where men and women, beneath the appearance of a shallow conformity, continue to seek an answer to the question of life's meaning. So I'm like reading it. I'm like, oh, yeah, like that's powerful stuff. That's really good. It gets even better. God is not afraid. He is fearless. He is always greater than our plans and schemes. Unafraid of the fringes, he himself became a fringe. So if we dare to go to the fringes, we will find him there. Indeed, he is already there. Jesus is already there in the hearts of our brothers and sisters, in their wounded flesh, in their troubles, and in their profound desolation. He is already there. So I'm reading this, mind being blown, right?
Seriously.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, something, this sounds familiar. Like, I feel like I've heard this before. And then I read part 136. True enough, we need to open the door of our hearts to Jesus, who stands and knocks. Sometimes I wonder, though, if perhaps Jesus is already inside us and knocking on the door for us to let him escape from our stale self-centeredness. And I immediately was like, I've read that before. And I pulled up this document, which everybody should go read. It's called Evangelizing the Peripheries. It is a short one-page little speech that was given on March the 9th, 2013 in Rome. So after Pope Benedict, this is relevant to the Popecast, after Pope Benedict resigned the pontificate, the cardinals that were invited to elect, you know, not invited, but of the correct age, gathered together in like a pre-meeting before actual conclave. Because conclave is not a chance for speeches. Conclave is not an opportunity to politic. Like conclave is prayer, right?
Right.
And so they needed a chance to politic, for lack of a better way to put it, and communicate ahead of time, like, what do we think is happening in the church right now? And every cardinal was given a chance to speak. And one cardinal got up there by the name of Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina, and he gave this little speech called Evangelizing the Peripheries. And this is what he says in part two of Evangelizing the Peripheries. And it's going to sound familiar. When the church does not come out from itself to evangelize, it becomes self-referential and gets sick. One thinks of the woman hunched over upon herself in the gospel. The evils that, in the passing of time, afflict the ecclesiastical institutions have a root in self-referentiality, in a sort of theological narcissism. In Revelation, Jesus says that he is standing at the threshold and calling. Evidently, the text refers to the fact that he stands outside the door and knocks to enter. But at times I think that Jesus may be knocking from the inside, that we may let him out. The self-referential church presumes to keep Jesus within itself and not let him out. He said that 5 years ago before he was elected Pope. And then now here we are in 2018, and he's saying, sometimes I wonder if perhaps Jesus is already inside us and knocking on the door for us to let him escape from our stale self-centeredness. Like those of you that think, though anybody that thinks that the Pope is just flying off the cuff and doesn't know what he's doing, he is very clearly telling us to stop being self-referential, self-centered Catholics, to get over ourselves and to go find the people on the margins and bring them into the church. And if we're not doing that, then we're not paying attention to the movements of the Spirit, because this is clearly the Pope and this is clearly the direction the Spirit is leading us.
Yeah, amen. Good Lord. Yeah. No, I love that. I mean, because again, with the – it's the – So at SEEK last year, the Focus National Conference, Father Mike gave the last keynote I think it was the last keynote. And he brought up that like there's a historical trend in the church. If you look, like, the reason that St. Benedict and St. Augustine, like, were called at the time that they were was because the church had gotten, like, bloated and fat mm-hmm. and lazy and needed to be, like, kicked back into shape. And it was the same thing with Aquinas, and it was the same thing with the Council of Trent and St. Charles Borromeo and all those guys. Like, the church was just bloated. And, like, every 400 or 500 years this happens, and it's time mm-hmm. for that to happen again. It's like we're yeah. seeing that again. It's like, and I think, like, in micro... we're talking about, you know, the video that's circling on Twitter today with EWTN mm-hmm. is like, there's a faction. I don't want to call it a faction, but there's just like a persuasion in the church, that I think has like gotten cultivated because St. John Paul and Pope Emeritus Benedict have like, we're so precise and we're also like, so, I don't know what the term like highfalutin comes to mind, but it's like, it's good. Like yeah. it's very good. Like high theological language, so we can understand beyond the shadow of a doubt, like what the church mm-hmm. believes, why it is, mm-hmm. and that's all very important. But it's like those people have gotten comfortable. Like those people are like the rich young man who refused mm-hmm. to give away all that they have in service to the church, who they say that they trust the Holy Spirit. And I think that's why it's beautiful. And I agree that Pope Francis is very calculated. He's like, okay, canon law is established. The catechism yeah. is established. We're going to move beyond that. Like, right. Use that as a foundation, and we're going to go see. Like, we're going to go feel around in the corners. Like, go to the fringes. Exactly. And, like, find out where Jesus is.
And there are people there. Like, I think sometimes – so years ago, I was in a drive-through line here in Lake Charles, and there was a guy in a truck in front of me, and he had this bumper sticker that infuriated me. And it said, "The liturgy will save the world." And, like, I literally – I got home, and I slammed the food on the table, and I said, "Tommy, just saw this damn bumper sticker, and it said the liturgy will save the world. The liturgy won't save the world. The people that are infused with the Eucharist at the liturgy will save the world." And like, I got raging mad. And sometimes I feel like that's where we are in our church right now. Some people are like, "Well, I'm gonna go to mass," and like, that's enough. And it's like, it's not. Like, go forth and spread the good news after mm-hmm. that, and then the liturgy is actually gonna effectively work.
Yeah.
Like, I was at a papal mass. Like, I was there. Francis is very reverent. He is very prayerful. Like, this is not like there's not clowns bouncing through St. Peter's Square. Like, most of the mass was in Latin, for the record, everybody. Right. Like, he happened to be facing me, but it was still Jesus. But like, that liturgy, even with the liturgy with the Pope, which was one of the most beautiful masses I've ever been to, and one of the most beautiful choirs, and like, I'm there in St. Peter's Square getting to carry these palms. Like, that moment was not the best moment of ministry I experienced all day.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. In fact, the best moment of ministry I had later that day was when I was hanging out with two of my seminarian buddies who are studying in Rome, and we were sitting outside Old Bridge Gelateria having our gelato and like talking and visiting. Mm-hmm. And one of the seminarians I was with found one of those gigantic palms that the people get to carry. Somebody had left theirs like on the side of the wall by the Old Bridge stand. So he grabbed it and he was like, "I'm going to keep this. Like, I'm going to mail palms home to my family." And so he's sitting there with it, and this little boy, this little Italian kid, like a gypsy kid, comes up and grabs it and starts playing with it with some of his little friends or his siblings right there. And Andy, who knows fluent Italian, like talks to him and like is playing back with him. Both of us had gone to mass earlier that day and like had been infused with the power and the grace of Jesus Christ, obviously. But like in that moment of human connection, like this American guy from Southwest Louisiana was able to have a moment of joy with this little Italian kid whose parents probably like beg for food every other day in the city of Rome and like take advantage of their tourists. And right. like, that was a powerful moment. And so like, the liturgy did not save the world for the two of us. Like, the liturgy allowed us to go forth and be Jesus to other people.
Right.
And I have no doubt that that is what Francis is saying with this document. It's beautiful. It's powerful. He talks about spiritual combat. Like, we could go off on 10 tangents about that. Like, obviously, the Pope believes in hell. He talks about the devil. Like, come on.
What? I am so excited to finish this document now.
Yeah, he talks about discernment. He gets close to the end, and he, like, appeals to Mary, which I think we all forget how much the Pope loves Mary. Like, the day after he was elected, he went to St. Mary Major's and, like, made an offering to Our Lady.
Oh, yeah.
And he always looks for opportunities to remind us of how going to Our Lady is a great gift to us in our church. Like, so I have homework for your listeners. I would encourage everybody to read this document with a highlighter, and obviously like highlight your favorite lines in one color, and then highlight the lines that make you uncomfortable in another. Because there are some things in here that stretch us and that challenge us and that make us think like, ah, oh, I need to change. I need to convert. I need to pay attention to this. And it will like it. I think it will bear great fruit in everybody's Easter and in, you know, good old boring, ordinary time. It's coming up.
Yes. Nice. I think that's awesome. Thanks for that. That's probably a good place to cap. Unless you have any parting shots on the document, I think that was a great place to cap.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. I just go read it. Rejoice and be glad, everybody.
Yeah, amen. Okay, so I was thinking through, because you hopefully will not be the first and last interview on the podcast.
Yeah.
So just general interview questions, maybe for yourself. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite era of of church history and why?
Ooh,
and
that's
it can't
a good
be
one.
Right now.
Can't be right now. Well, no, because it's present time. I'm gonna sound like a raging liberal when I say this. I love Vatican II. I love how John the 23rd called it. I love the snarkiness of John the 23rd. He's one of my absolute popes. I always make a point to go visit him when I'm at St. Peter's, which that sounds like I'm there all the time. I probably won't be back for another 5 years, but I always go there when I can. I'm a big fan of like how the John the 23rd and Paul the 6th are so different, and yet we're both beautiful gifts to the church at that time. I did a paper in college on Lumen Gentium, so the light of faith. It was in one of the first advanced theology classes that I took, and was one of the reasons I wanted to continue studying theology. It was a history class. And so we got to pick an era of the church. We got to write about the development of a specific document. And so I chose Lumen Gentium, which talks about the people of God. And I read about the different drafts, which was so cool to read about and think about that when we were working on the pre-synod document. So Lumen Gentium talks about the people of God, and in the lineup of talking about the people of God, they talk about the laity first, mm-hmm. before they talk about the bishops and the religious, and they not that bishops and religious are like second fiddle by any means, but like in the development of the document, that got switched right at the end.
Ooh,
that the people of God, like the laity, were talked about first, in order to ensure that people recognize that, like, you don't have to, just like Francis is saying, like, you don't have to be ordained, you don't have to have a habit to be called to holiness, right. Like, you're all called to it. So I love that time in the church.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's interesting. I mean, and we probably take it for granted, because like we can read about that, and that's one thing to like, understand, oh mm-hmm. yeah, that was a thing. But then like I'll talk to my mom or my dad or something, and they'll say, oh yeah, no, like it was just kind of like, if you had to be a priest to be holy, like that was kind of the understanding.
Yeah.
Like there's just all Bible. Sorts of Yeah, which is just like mind-boggling to us.
Yeah,
yeah, sweet.
The spirit and the fruits of Vatican II have been felt by our generation.
Yeah,
I mean, and will continue to be. Like my daughter will still be unpacking Vatican II when she's my age.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think actually I told the story because I did an episode on Paul the Sixth mm-hmm. two episodes ago, I think, and told the story. But the former Bishop of Helena, Bishop Morlino, who's now in Madison, was a larger guy. Actually, when he got made a bishop and went to baby bishop school. Which is what they call it. So they call them bambinos, apparently. Yeah. And John Paul saw him, was like, "Ooh, grande bambino."
That's awesome.
Big baby. Anyways, but my mom told me this story that he had said to her about Vatican II. Is like, you know, when you get major surgery and you're sidelined for 3 to 5 days drinking your lunch out of a straw, mm-hmm. you can't get the biggie size fry until about a week after surgery. It's like when you do surgery on a billion person organization. It's 30 to 50 years until you start to realize and there's all sorts of craziness, like the body's doing all sorts of weird things, like in the time when it's recovering. And it's so beautiful to see that is true, that's the case.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. Who's your favorite Pope and why? Maybe you already mentioned, if it's John the 23rd.
John the 23rd does have a very special place in my heart. But I'm a big fan of Pope Benedict the 16th. I know I went a little crazy on my like love of Francis, and some people are like, well, how those two jive. But so I was in high school when John Paul II died, and like I was Catholic and I loved my faith, but like JP II was kind of that like rock star Pope, but mm-hmm. I wasn't like, I hadn't given my life to Jesus until Benedict was elected. And that was the year I was confirmed. That was the year that we got a new bishop in our diocese who is a huge Benedict fan, and like he like very much reminds me of Benedict as far as like his pastoral style and like the way he writes. And so I went through college. I got my theology degree under Benedict. Like I saw Pope Benedict probably, no, this is not an exaggeration, 20 or 30 times when I lived in Rome when I was there as a student, because we would go into the Angelus every Sunday, and we would we had opportunities to go to the Wednesday audiences as frequently as we wanted. So he was really the first Pope that I think in my own life that I really paid attention to as a living guy. And when he resigned, it was Mardi Gras of 2013. It was Mardi Gras Day, the day before Ash Wednesday. And I woke up to text messages, "Did you hear about the Pope?" thinking he had died. And I remember that feeling of it was like my grandfather had died. And then opening up CNN and being like, "Oh, thank God. Okay, no, he didn't die. He just retired." Wait. Is he allowed to do that? Is he allowed to quit? Why is he quitting? What's wrong? And so I adore him. I adore his writings. His Jesus of Nazareth books moved me deeply. I reread them every year around Holy Week and Advent. I love his one leading into Christmas. I love how professorial he is, how grandfatherly he is. I love the stories. I love his accent. I adore him. I will weep for days and go into a period of mourning when the good Lord brings him home, which I think he thought was going to happen a little sooner than it had. But that's happens when you get to rest and play with your cat all day long. You end up living for another decade.
Man, if there wasn't a more adorable and hilarious picture than that picture of him petting the two little kittens in his big, long, retired Pope alb.
Oh, yeah. My favorite is him sitting at the piano with the cat sitting on top of him. Yeah, yeah. I drink orange soda from time to time when I'm reading a Pope Benedict 16th document. I'll pull out an orange Fanta and be like, "This one's for you, Papa." I miss you. So he's going to be a great saint of the church someday. I can't wait until he's a canonized Benedict the Great,
Yo, yes, that would be awesome. I feel the same way. I don't know if he's my favorite because I have a couple others, but I just read Last Testament, the book length interview with him. Have you read that yet?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the first real thing that I had read, that was lengthy, from him, just reading something where is it true? You might know the story. Whenever he would write something, he would give it to one of his sisters who wasn't really educated. I heard the story about how he gauges whether something is readable or not. And before he releases it.
Yeah.
Or at least he used to. He had a sister who wasn't educated, on the college level or graduate level or whatever. And he would give her the things that he wrote as a priest or bishop. And if she could understand them, then he would release them. But she didn't get it.
I want to believe that. My favorite is the story of him after he got elected and the German pilgrims came to mass with him. And they were like, "So what were you saying in the conclave? What did you think?" And he's like, "I just was praying that I wouldn't become the Pope." And evidently the father did not listen. It's I just love, because he tried to retire. He was not. And I remember distinctly watching John Paul II's funeral, and he gave the homily. And my mom said it in the living room. She said, "He's going to be the next Pope." And I was like, "No, he's too old. They'll never elect him." And that's what the Lord gave us, a few good years with this remarkably professorial, holy guy that I think taught us a lot. That what's the phrase? JP2 taught us how to die. Benedict XVI taught us how to think, and Pope Francis is teaching us how to live.
Yes.
And it's we're living at a really cool time in our church, and in the fact that we have access to all that we have to share what's going on in our church, and I wish we would fight less and just recognize what gathers and joins us more, and show the depth and the beauty of what we have,
Amen. Yeah, sweet. Well, thanks for sharing that. Before we close, where can people find you? What's new and happening? I know you've got a new sweet book out.
I've got everybody can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Katie Prejean. That's Prejean. It's French. My Instagram is mostly photos of my daughter, so be warned. My Twitter is my random thoughts about Catholicism and drinks and ice cream and Parks and Rec. And I've got two books published from Ave Maria Press, Room 24, Adventures of a New Evangelist. It's about my life as a teacher, as a high school teacher for 5 years. And I would geek out about the Pope all the time. And then my new book, Follow, Your Lifelong Adventure with Jesus, is all about ways that you can build a relationship with Christ.
Nice. Sweet. Thanks. And I hope on yours and Tommy's new podcast that the Red Reddington impression makes an appearance every so often.
I'm sure it will. I mean, Robert California yes, crazy, right. Everybody. Pawnee, Pennsylvania is coming out sooner than you think. And it's just a married couple talking about their favorite episodes of Parks and Rec and The Office. Everything from the virtues of the characters of The Office. We do kind of Catholicize a little bit of it. So the virtues of the characters of The Office, our favorite women and our favorite men. Who would be best friends? I'm really excited about this episode. Who would be best friends from Pawnee and Scranton? Like, if those two worlds were in the same universe, which other than like Anne and Karen Filippelli, if you can like suspend reality for a little bit, like maybe they're twins in that universe, right? Like they actually part of the same world. So my husband and I are launching that probably like early June. We've got to go on vacation, like have somebody watch the baby so we can like hammer out all of our episodes.
Yes, I'm very excited. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Pawnee, Pennsylvania. Yeah,
Pawnee, Pennsylvania.
I am very excited to listen. Sweet. Well, Katie, thank you so much again for joining the podcast, the Popecast. What am I talking about? And hope to have you on the next time the Pope releases a document. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate it.